The beginning of my dance career seemed like a fantasy to me. I felt like I was on top of the world. Touring with Rihanna, having already worked with Beyonce, I was booking commercials, just making money, you know, at the beginning of my 20s. And I was really living young and free. And then I got the opportunity to work with Pharrell Williams on his Dear Girl promo tour. I went from being the cover girl of his Marilyn Monroe single and traveling the world to being injured, depressed, and forced to be sat down for 4 months, all in the same year. Changed my life completely. That was my reality check, that this art life is not a game. How does one prepare for such life-altering things? Ah, that's the thing, you don't. That's when I learned you can't control, prevent, or go against the waves of life. You just learn how to surf with them.
Wow. So thank you for that, Khadija. But to get started, I mean, I love that last point of art life, and more generally, more broadly, speaking to the work of creatives. Khadija, do you feel that creatives are given due credit when compared to more traditional fields of work? Do you think that their work, all that it takes to be a triple, quadruple threat, do you think that you all are given your due credit?
I do not believe so. Okay. I think people look at art and they look at it as something that doesn't need work. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's something in the mind. Oh, you're creative. What kind of lifestyle can that be? Or how can you take care of your family being a creative? When in actuality, creative people create the money or the lifestyle, or I should say career, that they're going to live. And really, majority of the time, from scratch. There's no bi-weekly check. Sometimes there's no check for months. So you're creating job opportunities for yourself based off of this creativity that only you can see in your head, whether it be through writing, whether it be through dance, whether it be through song or theater. These things take a lot of work, a lot of energy, and that's where the line really comes from. Many are called, few are chosen, because not everybody goes through with it. So I do feel at times people who are creative artists struggle, and they try to fight with people to get them to understand that I'm working a 9-to-5. It may not look like you're 9-to-5, but I am working, and I don't always feel like we are given the credit that we deserve in many other ways too. So hopefully that
no, it does. It absolutely it absolutely does. And I think too, taking it a step back, departing a bit from the introduction, taking it a step back, when you're raised in Brooklyn, born in Trinidad. And so I think, coming from humble beginnings or not, still there's something to wanting and knowing that there's more to life. There's more than being just a Brooklyn girl, than just being an island girl. Khadija, what was the point, or what was the moment, or did you realize that there was more to life, that you realized that you wanted to be more than what your immediate circumstances were?
And it had to be right after that injury. For such a long time, I've been on stage since I was 8 years old. So for me, it became, I needed to get to the top of whatever this training I had been doing for so long was going to be. Did I know what it was? No, absolutely not. So I get to Rihanna, I get to the Beyoncés, the Pharrells, and this is like exciting. Mm-hmm. I thought this was the cream of the crop. Like, yeah. I'm at the top of my game, so to speak. But we forget that there's always higher levels you can go in the mind, in the spirit, and in your work. So I really had to take a step back and say, what am I going to do next? Mm-hmm. Being injured, it's like a car ran over my foot. What if we got to? I won't get too far into that. But imagine an athlete, a dancer, or I should put it in this term, imagine a chef getting one of his fingers injured, or a hairdresser.
Yeah.
It was like I was crippled. So I had to fight with feeling like, is this the end? Or am I supposed to be focusing on something else? So it was a huge realization for me that I needed to be working on the bigger picture, whatever the bigger picture might have been. And I also needed to take a step back and realize that I wasn't I wasn't all the way thankful for the moments that had come my way thus far. I was just moving. Everything was fast. It was coming to me left and right. All these great things. And then I felt like this was the moment that I needed to sit down and really focus and get myself ready for what was to come.
And Khadija, what was that process for you? That process of honing in, that process of focusing. What were those 4 months like for you?
I spent a lot of time reading.
Okay.
I read books like The Power of Now.
By Eckhart Tolle. Oh my goodness. I love that book. God. Love that book.
The Power of Now and The Power of I Am by Joel Osteen. And actually, those books, my mind needed to be stimulated. I needed to take time every single day. I watched a lot of YouTube inspirational videos. I actually connected with a lot of friends and family that I had been neglecting while I was so busy. A lot of different friends and perspective for me. And then I spent a lot of time in physical therapy. It was almost like survival mode. So every day I had to be doing something that was good. So something that was therapeutic to me in any way, shape, or form. And then I just took the time to connect with my own thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every day I spent time just doing any one of those.
Yeah. And Khadija, at what point early on in that injury did you realize or that you feel that you had, that it was necessary to give yourself time to heal? Because I'm sure you weren't expecting 4 months. I'm sure you're hearing maybe 6 weeks, you know, maybe 1 month, maybe 2 months. What was that point?
You're taking me back down memory lane. It's good. I was in denial for probably about 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
After the injury, I was in denial. I was like, this isn't going to happen. I'll be back next week. Mm-hmm. I'll be better. And sure enough, every morning became like a test.
Wow.
If I stepped on my foot and it felt like it was still in pain, I knew I had to go into that day with another mindset. Some days I felt good, and then I would do something. The smallest of things made me go, "Oh wow, I'm not better." So I want to say by the third month, I was like, "Oh, I really need to keep my spirits up because I was feeling defeated." And then I had to keep talking to my family and talking to certain people, my mentors, just to help me get there. And then it's like I'm watching the tour continue on without me. They even replaced me, which, you know, this is show business. The show must go on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think by that third month, I was really like, okay, this is happening. I have to just accept it. And the 4 months, I say, because I had a boot on to help my boot. And it still took about 3 more months after that to be back to normal. It was hard. It was really hard. I wouldn't even try.
And being in a field as competitive as the entertainment industry, specifically dancing, with the biggest names, with Rihanna, Beyonce, Pharrell, the list goes on. Did you feel at a point that you were disposable after having peaked so early, as you said?
Oh, very good question. I never felt like I was disposable because I felt like I was an asset everywhere I went. Whether it be because I was a beautiful chocolate girl or because my dancing made them want to keep me there, or maybe because the Rihanna Navy connected to me and felt like, oh, we'd love to see her on stage with Rihanna. I almost want to say I didn't think I was disposable, but as far as age, I would say the things that I was able to attain in my early days of my career, I felt like it was all worked for. For someone to be on stage at 8 years old, you're getting experiences that some people don't learn until their training stops at 18. That's a whole 10-year advantage. So I felt like I was in the right place at the right time. So I just feel like because of that confidence, because I had the years of training and practice, I knew how to make myself stand out, whether in whatever job it was, whether even if it was a print job. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah. I made myself someone who they wanted to call back, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And let's just delve a bit more into the specifics of that. You know, how do you stand out in rooms full of ambitions and these very competitive audition rooms. Of, you know, as you mentioned, just in doing some research on your process of becoming a part of the Loud Tour, was a 2-day audition process and over 400 people auditioning. How did you stand out? Was it just in the work?
So there's a broader scale for that.
Yeah.
Not only do you have to have the talent, you have to have a type of confidence that is unwavering. Mm-hmm. Whether it be the fact that you're one of one,
yes.
You're up against 100 other girls, and they all look different. Why should you, this dark-skinned, 5'8" girl, be chosen for this tour? I went in there with the mindset of, I'm going to give my best. I'm going to shine. I know this material. Like, I know what I'm going in here to do, mm-hmm. and how I should impress them. Now, there's one. It's an art to dancing for an artist. You don't want to be the star who feels they should be in front and outshine them. There's a way in which you shine, but you also compliment them. Mm-hmm. So I use techniques like when I was in the audition, looking out, dancing next to the people that were around me. Huh. I made it as though we were in a show. Huh. So you can see how I would look on stage with this artist. It didn't become just about the audition and impressing the 7 people who sat in front of you.
Right.
It was more so, I want y'all to feel good when you look at me so you can get an idea of how I could make this audience feel when I'm next to Ariel.
Huh.
So there's a mental process that goes along with that. Now, then there's nerves. Then there's the chance of you forgetting the choreography. All of that can come into play, but at the end of the day, if your spirit is louder than the ones around you, it's hard for you to be missed.
Yeah.
So the confidence also kicks in where it's like, listen, I'm giving you all I got. It's either I'm going to be a part of this or I'm not. Then you have to also know that, look, in your life, wherever you may be, this might be for you or it might not be. Because I went into the Beyoncé experience auditions, which were probably, I want to say, 4 or 5 years before I got to Rihanna,
yeah.
And I did my thing, but it still wasn't, I wasn't seasoned enough for that sort of playing ground. So I want to say that experience taught me how to walk into Rihanna.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I say, depending on where you are in your life, the job could either be for you or you might need the learning experience,
yeah.
Is what it is.
And so I'm hearing a lot from that, kind of a level of confidence, obviously, but I think kind of a spirituality on which a ground, yes, a foundation.
Believing that you're exactly. supposed to be there.
Khadija, I want you to take us back to a moment. So it's 2006, the MTV VMAs, and
mm-hmm.
you're performing on Ring the Alarm. Could you tell us a bit about what your specific role is? I found it to be quite exciting / nerve-wracking, I'm sure, had I been in your shoes or had anyone been in your shoes. But what exactly...
No.
were you in charge of doing for that performance?
So, I was called to be an extra
uh-huh.
for that performance, and I didn't know what it entailed. So we get in the audition process, and Frank Gatson, he goes, well, we need you to learn all of the choreography that the girls did in the trench coats.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh man, I get to be one of these girls. Exciting! Oh. No, they needed to know that I could pick up, that I was fast, and I was aware of everything going on because my job was only to unhook Beyoncé as she came out from the ceiling. Now, so many things could go wrong in a situation like that.
Yeah.
So many things could go right. So I took that as life and death,
mm-hmm.
okay? So not only did I go in there and kill the choreography part, I went in there, unhooked her as if my life depended on it,
mm-hmm.
okay? Because if she did not come out of that harness or be unclipped, then she couldn't make her way down the ramp to connect with the rest of the girls for the rest of the choreography mm-hmm. and finish the performance. So it was like, oh, I can finish my own. And sure enough, even in that audition process, they saw my fight and they called me back to work again after just going in to be an extra. So that was actually the start of my dance career.
I mean, let's look at that. Let's fast forward to kind of maybe the next time or, you know, next significant time that you worked with Beyoncé, and that was on Formation. So tell us about that callback, you know, and I mean, if you can compare it to the first time to the second time and kind of that 10-year gap in between, you know, what was that second callback like for you?
Well, thankfully, Chris mm-hmm. Grant, mm-hmm. who's one of the choreographers, He called me and said, I would love for you to be a part of this project. I didn't really know what it was at the time. And he said, you know, you work with me, but I don't feel like you really got the chance to shine with her. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, wow. And at this time, I'm thinking I'm moving into my modeling career. I'm like, oh, dance, man, I don't even have it anymore to go back into rehearsal process and all that stuff. And that's when I walked into the room and I saw the choreography. I heard the song. I said, oh, this is going to be big. This is gonna be big. Still didn't even know about Lemonade. Still didn't know about Super Bowl. All I thought we were going in for was to do this song, this one song. And it actually made me go, oh, Khadijah, this is time for you to rock it.
Right.
You gotta step it up. So I went in there, did my thing, you know, and sprinkled my black girl magic on there. but of course, it was about 40 other girls working on that project. But right. In the same breath, that confidence, those years of experience, the many no's, the opportunity to get that no in early on in my career with Beyonce,
yeah,
all helped with the moment that I made it to the Formation squad. Because it was like, oh, there ain't no holding back. I'm giving y'all my all.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get to do it the last time, but I'm going to show out this time.
You better believe. So you better believe that you're going to remember Khadijah this time.
Exciting way for me to say, hey, look, I'm glad I made it back to Beyonce.
Yeah.
You know, some people don't get the chance to redo something that happened in their life or to actually have it happen. So then they loved having me there, and they were like, well, we want you to do the tour. We have a spot for you.
Mm-hmm.
But my mentality had already been so removed from tour life because I felt like it took a lot away from what I wanted to focus on for my personal goals, you know, and what else I wanted to achieve. And I ended up turning it down. Imagine, here's the tour. Here's the tour now. You waited 10 years for them to call you back, and here we are.
I think there's so much power in that, you know, and giving it that no, you know, not for the sake of turning down this big project, but for the sake
of
I can't do this project because I see myself going in a different direction. And, you know, in order to be a success, it takes guts and kind of a willingness to risk it all, no matter how, you know, cookie cutter and ideal that opportunity could have been. Could you tell us about when you learned to say no? What was it like giving that no? One on the Formation tour, but I'm sure with many other projects that you've had.
It's so interesting because I still struggle with this in my life today. It's the risk takers that we see soar.
Right.
And it's so much to be said in that because with risks, you never know what can happen. But a mentor of mine told me, if you take the leap, the net will follow. And I got that nugget right before I moved to L.A. And that was in New York. I was about, 22 at the time, and I moved to LA, and there were a lot of things coming my way, and I was excited. I wanted it all. I wanted to do everything. I'm like, oh yeah, this is work. Oh, I'm gonna do that. And then, cut to a few years later, I started to realize, wow, not every project deserves what I bring to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is, I always looked at myself as a bigger artist. Not so much music artist,
sure,
but I felt like if I was going to do something, it was going to be big.
Yeah.
It was going to be the best. It was going to be working with the best. So I started to realize I brought something to the table. You know, I either was called to fill in a certain look, a certain aesthetic,
mm-hmm,
or a certain vibe. So that's when I started to say, okay, maybe I'm not supposed to be doing everything. And this is not to discredit any artist who isn't on the level of a Beyonce, Rihanna, or Pharrell. But I started to say, if I'm going to do a video, I'm not going to be just one of the girls in the video. I'm going to be the lead. So then I started to say, no, I'm not going to do this video because you want me to just be a body. No, am I getting highlighted? Am I being featured? And what is this doing for the culture? What is this doing for the career? For my career? What is this doing for my brand?
Right.
So that's how I started to look at stuff. And the no-looks became easier because now I knew exactly what I wanted to do and what sort of impact I wanted to leave on any project that I was going to be involved in. So now we get to the Beyonce process, and this was one of the hardest notes of my life because I didn't know if I was making the right choice or if I was making the wrong choice. But something in my spirit said, I need to go chase this modeling career that's always been in my mind and in my spirit. And I wanted to just take a chance for once. Why not?
Yeah.
I have been dancing for so long, and I'm the type of person where I need new creativeness to come my way. I look up at the sky. I look up at the way a building is painted. I look at the way somebody did their hair. All of that is research and stimulation for my creative process.
Yeah.
So I said, you know what? Who's to say I don't work for the rest of the year? This is an opportunity for me to sit down and really focus on the next level with this Beyonce moment, because there was a lot that happened. Not only was I one of the dancers, I got to do the L feature with her. I got to do the formation, like one of the biggest scenes in it. It's like there's so many moments that came from being a part of that. And then also watching the creative process of a Beyonce. Mm-hmm. All of that was exciting for me. I was like, oh man, I know what I'm going to do on the next day. I'm going to use this. I'm going to give it 100%. I'm going to practice. It's like everybody has their thing. So it wasn't an easy note, I'll say that. But I am thankful that I took that chance and took that risk, so to speak, and said, you know what? Listen, I'm going to take this time to focus before I head into this next chapter of my 30s and try to tackle these dreams that I still got left.
Right.
I'm young. I'm free. I can't really look at the millions Beyonce gonna walk away with, or not even just her, whoever the artist might be, you know, because at the end of the day, they're still gonna win, whether you're there or not.
Right. What I'm hearing so much of, as you talk about this pivot from dancing to wanting to make that heart shift into modeling, you know, you mentioned a time or two already in our time talking that you've been compartmentalized, you know, as kind of the dark-skinned girl, as the chocolate girl. How have you transcended those societal boxes of being just the dark-skinned girl, or being just the dancer, of being just anything? In what ways do you transcend those societal norms, those boxes into which you're placed?
I shine.
Mm-hmm.
My thing is, I have to shine. I have to get you to look past my skin tone.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about it is, color is such a, it's something that people love to just, they want to not only talk about, but target in a way where you're almost judged off of who you are, what you can do, and anything that you've worked for is put now in the back, and what you look like is going to be what's in the front. So granted, yes, I was blessed with some awesome features. Thank you, God, and my parents. But too, it's like my mindset has been such a staple for me to transcend it in wherever I may go.
Yeah.
Just because I know when I get there, I already got your attention, because you might be looking like, oh, wow, such beautiful skin, woo, woo, woo.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm going to turn on, and I'm going to turn on the star power, and I'm going to perform my best, whether it be in an audition, whether it be in a photo shoot,
mm-hmm.
whatever it might be, I'm going to bring who I am as a person, and I'm going to make sure that that shines. It has to, because I can't compete with 10,000 mixed girls.
Yeah.
I can't compete with 10,000 blondes. I'm never going to compete with brunettes or even a light-skinned black woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you guys want me to, and I know y'all want me to sit there and, you know, feel intimidated or feel like I should be happy that I got this opportunity to be up here.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm here because I'm supposed to be here despite any skin tone or any sort of box you want to place me in.
Speak on
so
it.
So I've always been my duty to make sure that you're going to see this little black girl shine. in the dance moves, in my confidence, whatever it might be in. And I really feel like that's helped my career. Because not only do they call me to be, you know, one of the bodies to fit the mold, the Asian, the mixed girl, the blonde, and then we have the chocolate girl. No, I'm also going to let you know that, look, I actually have talent. Mm. And I want to help make this project be bigger than it was.
Yeah.
By having me along. So.
Wow.
Also, too, it's like when I did the Sephora digital beauty.
Yeah.
It was like they fell in love with what I was saying. I think I said, one of my cool quotes I said was, don't tell her she's beautiful for a dark-skinned girl. Now, I'm on set with all different, you know, races of people, but I'm the only black girl that's there. So you hearing me say that, is I want to say in the moment it was pretty big because I don't think they heard it in that term. And everybody else was talking about beauty and, oh, I love my lip gloss and my mom. And then I'm over here like, listen. Don't tell her she's beautiful for a dark skinned girl. Tell that woman she is beautiful because of who she is, yes, and what she made you feel in the moment. So I have a bigger job to do. I'm not only here to twerk. I'm actually setting an example for you guys to know that, look, we are people. We are talented, beautiful individuals with just a little more melanin than you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I have a job to do. And like Big Sean said, it's when you realize that it's bigger than you.
Stay tuned.